This is the 2 North Jackson Podcast with news, insights, details, and accomplishments from Alabama's 67 county governments. After a break for the 2023 regular and second special sessions, welcome to the 2 North Jackson Podcast for July 2023. Today we'll focus on the keynote speaker at the 95th Annual Convention, a close look at our incoming president, Joe Knight, and a successful county family project. We'll begin as Marty Stokes has a visit with Cam Marston, the keynote speaker for the 95th Annual Convention.
I am joined by Cam Marston, our convention keynote speaker this year. Cam is a leading national expert in generational differences. He teaches how those generational preferences affect every aspect of the workplace. He has a podcast that's also used as a radio show, and he is a commentator for Alabama Public Radio. Cam has authored 4 books, most recently, What Works, the 10 Best Ideas from his first 200 episodes of his podcast. And Cam will kick off our 95th annual convention at Perdido Beach Resort on Wednesday, August 23rd. Cam, thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be here, Marty. Thank you so much for the invitation. Look forward to seeing your group again.
Likewise, and I will go ahead and get started. Cam, one of the things that county government has seen since COVID is many people had to work from home a little bit because of the shutdown and regulations put in by the government at times, and they enjoyed it and felt like they wanted to stay at home working. What have national companies seen with those employees working from home? And is that something that's sustainable for an organization such as county government, where it's pretty difficult to work from home when you have hard records and files and you have to deal with the public face to face?
What the national organizations and international organizations have seen as a result of working from home was initially a surge of productivity, but more recently a decline of productivity. That this work from home experience, when new, was energizing to people, but it's become a little bit predictable, I guess, maybe, and the productivity numbers have dropped off as a result. And national companies, now these are commercial organizations, are doing everything they can to entice employees back into the workplace. And if you read the headlines, some of them are mandating that they come back. Some are enticing them to come back. Every company that I've talked to in my radio show, as well as the research that I do, as well as the conversations that I have on the road, have admitted that it's time to get people back into the workplace, but are having to try to do so delicately in order to prevent masses of amounts of turnover, because there are organizations that are still allowing people to work from home. I think the future is a hybrid state where people may work from home 2.5 days and be in the office 2.5 days. Or, and this is a conversation we'll have at Perdido, and that is, there is a difference between flexibility and working from home. Oftentimes, those two are confused with one another. Flexibility allows people to leave if a child gets sick, allows them to leave, for example, if there's a sporting event that their children are in and the parents want to see. Work from home is a different conversation. And I think companies will begin to define those two very clearly in their interview processes as well as in their recruiting processes. We offer a work from home opportunity as well as a flexible workplace. So what they're doing to entice people back is, like I said, 2 days at home, 3 days at the office, or 2.5 at home, 3 in the office. They're mandating, for example, that they have to be in the office Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday between the hours of 9 and, let's say, 3, so that people can count on them to be there if they need to engage them. Some are saying, if you come into work, we'll make donations to your favorite nonprofit, enticing them that way. Outokumpu, which is a big employer here in the south part of the state, is having coffees with the CEO in their offices in Helsinki in order to get people into the office and meeting with the CEO of the company. They're making him available. I think going forward, it will be mandated that people come back to the office. Now, in organizations like county governments, where the records are very valuable and can't be brought home, I think you're going to see a stronger push to get people back into the office with a more flexible work environment. And that is going to be necessary in order to get people to, number one, want to come to work for you, and two, stay working for you, because all elements of government offer a very reliable long-term paycheck. And I think that's very appealing to a certain type of worker. So I think they're going to recognize that there are sacrifices. Yeah, I may not get paid as much, but I have long-term employment. And now that they're offering this flexible work environment, it looks more and more appealing to me. So I think it's going to be very important that whoever's responsible for hiring, whether it be the manager, him or herself, the department leader, the HR department, be very clear up front that a work from home environment is not possible due to the nature of the work. It's very similar to a conversation that happens in a hospital. We cannot allow you to work from home in the hospital. You need to be here with the patients where the technology is available. Being very clear with it up front, and then being very clear to articulate the flexibility of the workplace. With a due amount of time, we offer a flexible workplace for you so that you don't feel chained to the workplace, but work from home in our county government here in XYZ County is simply not an option any longer. Now, there's another part of the conversation that I think people will find interesting, and that is many of the younger elements of the workforce are having loneliness issues. And while they want to continue working from home, they are recognizing the impact loneliness has on their lifestyle and their health. And I think some of them are recognizing, and I'm talking about the younger employees, the youngest millennials, the Gen Zs, are recognizing that this work from home was fun and interesting, but in long term, it's harmful to the health. It's making people sick. It's making people crazy. I'm using that term a little bit loosely. So I think there is the recognition from the workforce that interpersonal engagement, eye contact, being a part of a group, working physically around other people does have health and psychological health benefits to it. And they are beginning to move towards wanting that. So I think the future, and I've kind of gone in full circle here, a well-articulated, flexible workplace and a well-articulated fact that work from home is not allowable here due to the nature of the work, or not allowable on a regular basis due to the nature of the work. And then anything that the leadership can do to facilitate group interaction will likely be well received by the workforce of today and tomorrow.
That seems very true. And I think the earlier and the better somebody's able to articulate that to new hires will go a long way during the person's time with the county.
Yeah. And I would caution people to make promises or paint a picture of a workforce or a workplace in order to get someone to come to work there, but then have no intentions of honoring the picture that they painted. Or once the employee arrives, they find that the picture painted was very misleading, because the reputation that spreads about your workplace, if it's negative, is hard to overcome, particularly in two generations, the millennials and Gen Z. And I think we could make an argument that it's all generations, where information spreads virally, particularly negative information. If someone says, XYZ County told me it was like this, however, after 3 weeks here, I realized that was not true at all. It's actually like this. It's hard to overcome that. So transparency and honesty and credibility are very important in painting the picture of what your workplace is like, and then honoring the picture that you painted.
Cam, I know you have, like I mentioned earlier, your most recent book is What Works, the 10 Best Ideas from Your First 200 Episodes of the Podcast and Radio Show. You've got about 300 copies or so that will be provided at the convention for those that would like one. What are some of those ideas that are mentioned in the book?
I'm happy to answer that. The book was kind of a celebration of the 200th episode of the radio show / podcast. And I learned over those 200 episodes, there were ideas that kept coming out repeatedly. These are not the top 10 interviews. They're the top 10 ideas, and the ideas came through over many different interviews, and it's what all these successful managers, leaders, salespeople, organizations, they're doing these 10 things, though they may articulate them differently in different interviews. The one that really stood out over and over again was the value of persistence, of continuing to try. And in the for-profit world, this is hard to do. You get beaten up, you get a lot of negative information, you get a lot of defeats. But the stories of the people that succeeded the most, whether you call that high retention numbers, whether you call it high dollar sales, whatever it may be, are the ones that can cite the ability to persist through the headwinds. The managers that struggled to retain people and just kept trying new things until they found the right recipe. The salespeople who couldn't find a market until something happened, and they wouldn't have ever done it had they not persisted. So persistence is a key there. The second one that comes out is creativity. And we go into the need for creativity. And so many of us are so very busy getting things done, ticking off the check boxes, that creativity is not allowed to flourish. And the ones that can sit back and be quiet and think and not take a phone call for an hour and just really think, and it looks like unproductive time, But the creative ideas that come out of that time alone, that time spent thinking universally, are the ones that these companies say, this creative time gave me this idea, which led to this. So you'll find the book very easy to read. We've written it in a very lighthearted way. You can touch it at any point in the book and get some ideas. And I'm grateful for the organization buying them. I look forward to handing them out and signing them for those that want them.
I hope everyone that would like a copy is able to get one. I believe it will be very beneficial, and we appreciate you giving us that opportunity. Again, Cam, thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to having you in August at the convention on Wednesday morning.
Look forward to being there. Look forward to seeing you. Thank you very much.
And now we'll turn our attention to a conversation with the association's incoming president. Joe Knight is a veteran of the Jefferson County Commission, joining the commission in 2010, but he has a varied background before he became part of our county family. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Sonny. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys.
And as I said, you joined the county commission in 2010, but you're not an original native of Alabama, but you've been in Jefferson County long enough to call it home, right?
That's correct.
And of course, Joe has a varied background compared perhaps to some other county commissioners. Not only is he a practicing attorney in Jefferson County, but he's a former certified registered nurse, anesthetist, and I guess that gives you the ability to put the rest of your commissioners to sleep, right?
Well, I do sometimes have to count on my old skills in order to move this commission along. But yeah, it's something that I practiced as a certified registered nurse anesthetist for about 12 years before I went to law school and became an attorney. So I did put them to sleep in the operating room before, then I switched over, put them to sleep in the jury box, and now we're proceeding on to the commission table.
Well, we'll try not to put our listeners to sleep for the next few minutes as we visit about your year as president, which will begin at the convention on Thursday in the business session. And it will mark a very important date for us as an association. Joe, it's been 20 years since a member of the Jefferson County Commission was president of this organization. And I know our board of directors is extremely excited about the state's largest county, our economic engine, assuming a leadership role in what we think is the most important association in our state.
Well, I agree. In 20 years, it makes me proud to be able to serve the county and be president of this association. I look forward to it, and I think we got some good things to come.
Well, certainly we're coming to the conclusion of what's been a very challenging and rewarding year. We had a very, very good legislative year. Jay Thompson has done an outstanding job as president, but as you assume the leadership role of this organization, could you talk a little bit about why you wanted to become president and then maybe what you see on the horizon for us in the next 12 months?
Well, I've been a county commissioner. I'm in my 13th year, and I did become interested in the association. I've been involved with other associations, with the Alabama Association of Nurse Anesthetists, so I understand the association side of it, understand the legislative side of it. So I thought I would take those things that I've learned in the past and apply them to the County Commission Association and to help move the county commission along through the legislative and through the state process. So I think I have the experience to do it, and I'm interested in doing it, and I look forward to serving as president. And you've been there a long time, so you're the engine, and we're just going to drive it for a little while.
Well, in terms of driving, you know, the influence of the Jefferson County Commission on everything that happens in our state really can't be understated. And your involvement as president certainly will, I think, also highlight the need for other counties, especially the other large counties, to see the importance of being part of the association. We say 67 counties, one voice, and Jefferson is clearly the largest county, but you have a lot in common with Wilcox and Lamar. The problems we face in county government are very, very similar despite our size.
Yeah. I agree with that. And no matter if you're a large county or a small county or a medium county, we're still counties and we're still extensions of the state government. And we have to pull together in order to make this thing work for all the counties.
And you mentioned your continued role with the Alabama Association of Nurse Anesthetists. I have to stop for a second and make sure I get that out correctly. But you are a familiar face here in Montgomery, not just because you're a member of the Jefferson County Commission, but you're here for that part of your business as well. And I think that gives you a unique perspective as president. You will not have to learn the legislative process.
Yeah, that's true. I've been down there, I don't know, I guess 25 or 30 years. So I've been going down there for quite a while. you know, it's interesting to see a little bit of a change as years go along, as you well know, but it's still the same. I mean, they make the laws. We have to do what we can to protect our association, protect our county government, and to make sure that we're protected in the legislative process, because if you don't look out for yourself, no one else will.
Well, and I know it's something that you're very proud of there on the Jefferson County Commission, along with your colleagues, that you all came in office in a very challenging time in terms of especially the financial pathway for Jefferson County. And certainly y'all have changed the course of the Jefferson County Commission in general, but also its financial future. And that's something that's vitally important to all counties. You know, we joke that we are really in the good old days of counties' financial strength, but that can change on a dime.
Absolutely. And you're right. When we came in, basically Jefferson County was in a ditch, and we were able to kind of right the ship over time and then just kind of keep moving forward steadily. But you're right. You can't foresee the future, but you have to anticipate anything that may happen. And so that's what we've tried to do with building up our reserves in case something comes along the next time, that you still have to operate as government. And we've done that throughout the years, even in the worst of times. County government still functioned. Our people were taken care of. But we're in a much better position now than we were, say, 12 years ago.
And we'll keep a strong watch on that to make sure that things don't change in Jefferson and everywhere around the state. And I think that we've all benefited, all 67 counties, from everyone pulling in the same direction. And I know that that's one of the things you want to accomplish this year as president. The annual convention on Thursday afternoon, the business session, is when the official election will take place. And then we'll close out with a banquet where you will give us kind of a preview of the year ahead. And I know that you've already made a name for yourself inside the association with your wit and the approach that you take behind the podium. Do you have a preview at all for the members for what they might hear from you as we close out the convention on that Thursday night?
Well, don't miss it. I've been doing this for a while. I'm at a place in life that, hey, I've seen a lot, done a lot, but, you know, I've never tried to take myself too seriously, but at the same time, moving in a positive way, but not forgetting a little bit of fun along the way. That's what I've tried to do. So on that Thursday night at the banquet, I do have something that I would love to share with the members. And I don't think I'll revert back to my anesthesia days and put them to sleep. So I'll put it at that.
That's perfect. And we look forward to that and to the 12 months we'll spend together and to continuing to advance the pathway for Alabama's county commissions. Joe, thanks for joining us today. We enjoyed the visit and look forward to seeing you at the convention. Now we'll turn our attention to a closer look at our successful stormwater project. It is important to note that the interview that you're about to hear was recorded before we got confirmation from ADEM that all 65 stormwater applications have been approved and that some additional funding is available for counties in the days ahead. And now as we close the July 2 North Jackson podcast, we'll focus on what has been an amazing story of success of, as we say around the office, being who we say we are. Last winter, we really focused our efforts early on in January and February on trying to take advantage of a new provision in the ARPA rulemaking process that would allow a portion of the funds to be used on stormwater projects. Just a little change that was made that no one paid very much attention to. And when Governor Kay Ivey called the Alabama legislature into special session in early March, the county family rallied around this idea that a portion of this money should be available for counties to work on stormwater projects. We have two of our county engineer leaders with us today to talk a little bit about what happened once the state of Alabama gave us the ball. Justin Hardy is the Lee County engineer. He's been with Lee County for more than 20 years and is president of the Association of County Engineers of Alabama for about 22 more days, I think, Justin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Eric Hill from Lauderdale County will become president of the County Engineers Association. He's been in Lauderdale for almost a decade. And Eric, we appreciate very much your leadership as well.
Thank you, Zanny.
So we have our Cakes and Conversation event to kick off the legislative session, and we've almost thrown in the towel on this stormwater project. And then a couple of slices of strawberry cake. Seriously, We have everybody who can make a decision down there in the room together, and they hear the county engineers talking about what we can do in their districts. And we went from no to yes pretty quickly. The legislature passed that in the special session, and then they handed us the football. And I think what I'd like to do to get started, Justin, is let's talk a minute about that early part of that process. Shortly after the governor signed that law that said some of the money could be spent on stormwater projects, how the County Engineers Association turned its attention to that.
Well, Sonny, once we found out we were going to have access to the funds, we needed to figure out how can we do this and how can we do this statewide? How can we do this for large counties, small counties, counties with funds, counties without funds? We wanted everyone to have a chance at this, to have the impact it had the potential to have. And so a group of engineers got together with ACCA staff and tried to structure this in a way that we felt was going to be fair for everyone. Everyone have the best opportunities to make an application that would be worthy and approved, following, of course, all of the restrictions and all the laws that we have to make sure that we could do that. And again, trying to do that with counties of means and counties without means to make sure we could get that accomplished.
And of course, we had the cooperation and support of the Alabama Department of Environmental Management. They are handling the money. And the theme that you just put on the table is what we advanced to ADEM, and that is every county needs to get a slice of the pie. Every county needs to decide it at its county level what's important. And so they set aside a little over $10 million. Each county was eligible for $150,000. In federal money, we have to provide a 30% match. And Eric, could you talk a little bit about that and how we work together on slicing that part of the program?
Yeah, so working with ADEM, we used some existing application documentation that they had, which helped too because that streamlined the process. And so we talked with those guys and worked together as a group of engineers to make sure that we all understood that we were using existing application that maybe wasn't suited perfect for this program, but we made it work. And they were really good to work with us on that. And then we were just basically looking at the program as a whole for projects that really fit, you know, projects that were doable, that were attainable, projects that we knew that we could get the work done and get it done quickly.
Well, and we had some advantages, honestly. You know, our Investing in Alabama Counties program, we had a staff there that was already very familiar with the federal rule that allowed us, I think, to work with ADEM. We didn't have to gear up and learn this process and what's eligible. But the word stormwater means a lot of different things. But looking at the applications, most of the counties address stormwater problems in the same way. If you could talk a little bit about what a stormwater project really means.
For us, it's addressing when we've got the rain events that sometimes overwhelm what our current drainage systems can take. And in a growing county like Lee County, that's happening more often as we're losing more of our forest and subdivisions are going in, roads and streets are going in, and the stormwater's got to go somewhere, and it's got to go somewhere quickly. And so pipes that have been there for years no longer can handle what's coming to them and affecting things downstream as well. And so we're constantly getting calls about having to address and look at our pipes that are currently in place, many of them 50 years old or older from old farm-to-market programs and things like that. Are they big enough now to handle it? Are they still structurally sound and changes we have to make? And trying to prioritize that growth with our other projects, we often don't get to some of these isolated locations that this program has allowed us to get to in looking at how we can address that and trying to upsize it to make sure going forward these are no longer roadways that are prone to flooding that may happen in larger rain events and stuff, which helps reduce the amount of maintenance required after heavy rains. We can just blade the road again if it's a dirt road and we haven't lost a road or we don't have to close a road for safety reasons that this program is allowing us to address.
Eric, I know we had similar experience in North Alabama with some of the engineers you worked with in the application process in terms of this program actually offered counties an opportunity to do projects that without this program were probably not going to be done.
You're right. As we looked at this program, we looked at a lot of areas where we've had issues in the past. And like Justin said, maybe you have infrastructure that was outdated, it was old, it needed replaced, but it wasn't the biggest fire at the time. And so we just didn't have those extra funds to go after it. And so this allowed us to change a lot of that infrastructure out and upgrade. And like Justin said, we deal with that in Lauderdale County. We have growth and also just the modernization of agriculture. We see so much more runoff now on our county roads because every farmer's got a bulldozer. And so they're taking out every low spot and they're running that to the road. So because of that, the modern agriculture, we're seeing a lot more runoff. And so a lot of our projects that we did in this program have really helped with that.
Well, and one of the things we told the members of the legislature was that we'd be able to react quickly. That was a concern as they were passing legislation in March of 2023, and the deadline for having the money obligated is at the end of 2024. We said we can react quickly. And one of the things the County Engineers Association did was rely on its existing structure. And I know as president, you push the button on those area directors to reach out and let's do this together. If you could talk a little bit about that, you know, I say all the time we're a family. And this is a great example of what a family does.
Absolutely. And when ACCA staff reached out to me to see kind of where we are and make sure, you know, the deadline's approaching, we want to make sure we reach out to all the counties, not the active counties, if you will, but reach out to all the counties, make sure they take advantage of this. That was the first thing I did. I reached out to our area directors across the state. Eric and I could have picked up the phone and started calling, but for he and I to try to reach out to all 67 counties and have conversations with each about where they are, what help do they need, things like that, that was going to be time consuming. And so it's much more efficient to reach out to our area directors who know the engineers in their area and around them. They face similar issues oftentimes. And so I reached out asking them if they would reach out to all of their engineers in that area, let us know if they're intending to apply for this. If they're not, what are the issues or the struggles they might have? Is there a way we could help them? Can we offer any template to them to help do that? And the area engineers really responded. I'm very proud of what they did. They reached out and they communicated with their neighbors. They then communicated back with us and ACCA staff, letting them know, okay, County A has already got theirs submitted. County B should be submitting theirs by Tuesday. A couple of counties were waiting on their next commission meeting to adopt the resolution that was required with it. And so a lot of them were kind of in waiting with that. There were some that needed some help and they had a couple of questions. There was some misunderstanding about stormwater, just as you said earlier, where they weren't aware that's what this program really was and whatnot. So getting that communicated to them, you know, right now there are counties out there that have brand new engineers. There are counties out there that are searching for engineers. And so we know of one instance where a county engineer filled out not only his county's application, but he filled out his neighboring county's application, going back to the family side of things. I mean, adding to his plate what needed to be done to help make sure this money could be used. And like you said, we respond the way we say we can and will if given the opportunity. And hats off to all of those ladies and gentlemen that helped do that, as well as the ACCA staff in reaching out, answering questions, responding quickly to meet that tight deadline.
It's amazing, honestly, and if you're not inside this family and see it, that a county commissioner can call an engineer in a different county and say, we don't have an engineer now. Can you do our application for us? And it gets done and it gets submitted. Eric, I know when you assume a leadership role in this organization, then your phone rings a little differently than it did 2 years ago. And I know as the deadline got close, your phone started ringing.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, I love that we call this a family, and family has to communicate, and that is something that happened really well in this project. I was so proud of all the engineers that I talked to and just the stories I heard from around the state, and it wasn't just, hey, I need help. It was, hey, just so you know, our commission meets next Monday. We'll approve ours. Like, we were all talking. We all kind of knew what was going on, and it just helped. We weren't worried about Jones County not knowing what they were doing or needing some information. Like, everybody was talking, and I just thought that was a great sign of health of our organization and what's going on. I was very proud of the county engineers and how they joined together in this.
Yeah, I made one call to one engineer on Tuesday. The deadline was June 30th, which was a Friday. I made that call on Tuesday and said, okay, we've talked to some of your staff. They say you're not going to be able to submit an application. And I will not repeat on a public podcast what he said. And they submitted their application by Friday because there is some peer pressure, too, that we don't want to be the county that drops the ball. Where we are now is that the applications were submitted by June 30th, and ADEM is reviewing those as we come to the end of July. We fully expect contracts to be back in the county's hands in the next 2 weeks so that counties can sign those, return them to ADEM, and then work is going to begin very quickly. Many counties actually had some of the materials on hand so that they can get started, and we can keep that promise to the members of the legislature that they're going to see projects on the ground.
Yeah, that's one good thing about this project, too, is we'll really be able to expedite how fast we can get this work done because of, you know, existing contracts for materials and our existing equipment and labor force. And so this is the kind of work that we'll be able to just jump right on. And so that was another thing, too, that made this a really good overall project because each county had the capability to do this kind of work and do it quickly.
And of course, the use of our own labor and our own equipment can meet the match requirement that the legislature included in the legislation. And for us, again, that's just another way that we can say we want to be partners with the state. We weren't walking around with our hands out saying, give us all this. We're willing to put skin in the game. And we're crossing our fingers that this isn't all of the stormwater money that we get. We don't know, but there is still a window of time, and certainly we want to perform, and I know we're going to. And when that happens, sometime between now and December 31 of 2024, we're going to drive back to ADEM and say, hey, we still have stormwater problems. if there's any money remaining. And I don't think there's any question. We've performed in a way that they'll have confidence in us, whether it's this project or another one, that the county engineers are going to do what they say that they're going to do. And I thank y'all both for your leadership very much.
Thank you.
We look forward to seeing both of you and the entire county family in 22 days at our annual convention in Orange Beach. In the meantime, try to stay in the air conditioning and enjoy this summer. We'll see you at the convention.